When the families are ready and the time is right, where do they go for compensation? Joining us next to explain the process is Rod Windsor, partner at the Toronto-based law firm Blaney McMurtry. Before we get into what's next for the victims' families, can you tell us, Rod, about your work in this area?
Well, sadly, these cases have been going on since the start of aviation. What's new in the last few decades is that planes are crashing not so much because of equipment fault, but because of incidents like this. So we have handled most of the large scheduled airliner claims over the years, cases like Korean Airlines, where the Russians, the Soviet Union at that time, shot down the Korean Airlines flight, the Air India bombing, hijackings, the Ethiopian Airlines and Lufthansa hijacking. So sadly, there are a lot of these types of claims, and while collectively they're not a large number, the experience is substantial, and we have been able to learn from those experiences.
In those claims that you mentioned, how was compensation concluded? How long did it take for the victims' families, and just in general terms?
Well, first of all, in every single case, every single passenger's family has been compensated fully according to law. So that's, I guess, the short answer. But in terms of how you get there and the time involved, it varies case by case. Some cases are very straightforward. Others, sadly, involve many complexities. It's also really important to note that the rules have changed dramatically. So when we acted on Korean Airlines or Air India, where there was question as to the involvement of the airlines themselves in terms of being responsible for why the incidents occurred, we faced a much higher challenge, a higher bar to meet in order to receive compensation. So while those cases provide a great learning experience, but they were in fact more complicated than we face in claims today. So the short answer in terms of timing is that if an airline decides to obstruct at every possible step, and if there are any distractions such as too many people involved in the litigation and so on, it can go on for many years, perhaps as much as a decade. But that would be misleading in this context. The reality is much more typical, is we resolve claims in under 2 years, and there's really no reason why they can't be settled in a matter of 2 or 3 months if the airline really wishes to do so. However, the trigger is the date the claim is issued, and it is understandable that claims typically don't get started very early for obvious reasons, but that's what starts the clock ticking.
In this case, in the flight of 752, the Iranian government has admitted to shooting down the plane. Does that make the legal part of this any easier?
It doesn't in and of itself. And, I want to be clear, and you can get very confused and confusing very quickly in these cases, but it doesn't in and of itself. I think what it does is it clarifies the situation. It removes some possibilities that we would otherwise have to pursue. So in that sense, it's a good thing, quite aside from the fact that I think it's important for family's sake that that there be an acknowledgement of this nature.
How do they go about then getting compensation? Who do they pursue?
There are a number of possible parties in these cases, but what I like to do is really prioritize them. You start with the obvious one, and if you read the media or hear some commentators and some government spokespeople and so on, one might think that this is all about Iran. And it is, from the passenger's perspective, in the context of compensation, it really is not. The airline is legally obligated to pay compensation no matter what. And so it's important to keep that in mind front and center. That makes the airline the primary defendant, no matter who was to blame for this happening. These cases are determined in accordance with international conventions. Those conventions answer questions like where you can sue, who can sue, how you go about suing, what compensation is payable. And these rules are unique. They don't apply to any other kind of accident other than accidents on international flights of the airliners. So, you know, you got to keep this in mind at all times.
Is a class action appropriate here?
Class actions are interesting. You know, when we handled the Air India claim, that was before there was class actions legislation. And one of the things we struggled in that case, there were a lot of plaintiff's lawyers involved. And so we struggled with how do you deal with the problems arising out of so many different law firms involved. The experience of those lawyers varied dramatically. Those were early times. And so we struggled with it. And we then ended up doing something very interesting. With the help of the court, we, in a sense, created a class action to address some very limited specific questions arising out of the involvement of so many parties. We're able to do that. The court appointed four lawyers to act on behalf of all of the plaintiffs, but only with respect to the issue of liability or who had to pay. And, you know, and that worked reasonably well. So you may say, well, why wouldn't one pursue a class action in this case? There are advantages and disadvantages. In my view, based upon what we know today, the disadvantages far outweigh the advantages. And a class action, we may see one, and there are reasons why we see them in these cases, but in my view, based on what we know today, it would not be appropriate. Claims are very, very serious claims. They're individual claims. Each family situation is different. And the common issue probably will not be that difficult to address. It is the individual issues that are going to consume most of the attention, and those are better dealt with when you have large claims and individual actions.
Now, no amount of money or compensation can replace a lost loved one, but without appearing insensitive here, how is financial compensation determined?
I think the best starting point, particularly in cases like this, is to say what it doesn't cover, right? So under Canadian law, we do not compensate for grief. When someone's killed, that is by far the greatest consideration. So if we start off the fact that we don't compensate for grief, then what is it that the court does look at? It does not value a life. That would be, you know, our courts have made it clear that that's not an appropriate way of looking at this. What the courts do look at and what the law does provide is first compensation for any financial loss. And financial losses are, you know, much broader than we often think. In families, we all support each other. And we support each other not in signing a check over to a family member, but by sharing expenses, by being there when you're needed. In this day and age, you know, the families are not necessarily as important economically in all cases as others in that sense. But all families suffer when somebody is killed, and they suffer in many ways, and our courts will look at the evidence for each family and look at how this death affected every person in the family, assess the financial losses, and then there is a claim for what we call loss of care, guidance, companionship, which is more of an overall category which covers the other items which are not particularized.
Rod Windsor, thank you for joining us on the feed and providing such relevant and valuable information on this ongoing story.
You're very welcome.